Don't let Congress bust the spending caps again. So writes Jason Pye of FreedomWorks in an article for Washington Examiner. Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Jason Pye joins us on the program. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Tell us about the practice of Congress and these spending caps and how it seems like they just spend, regardless of the caps.
Yeah, no. First, Jerry, thanks for having me on. And indeed, this is a big issue. Congress every couple years has gotten in the practice of passing either budget agreements or pieces of legislation that bust through the spending caps that were established by the Budget Control Act of 2011. They're basically what they're saying is that we have to spend above the caps because we have to protect our domestic programs or national defense programs that are sacred cows to us. And what this ends up resulting in is a higher deficit. And we're not even addressing the longer term problems that the economy faces with entitlement programs like Social Security and Medicare, which are primarily responsible for the drivers of the budget deficit. You could eliminate all non-defense discretionary spending and still run about a $300 billion budget deficit every year. And that's a real concern. Whoa. We have to address all federal spending, but what better way to start than actually addressing discretionary spending?
Well, somehow having that happen under Nancy Pelosi doesn't seem like it's a likely thing to happen. And it didn't even happen under Paul Ryan and the Republicans, and they at least profess to try and be fiscal conservatives.
Yeah, well, they professed, and we all know how that goes sometimes with Republicans. They run every 2 years or 6 years, depending on which chamber you're talking about, on being fiscal conservatives, and they come in. They, generally speaking, don't mind higher spending levels as long as it's Republican spending levels because they spend that money the right way. But we have an interesting dynamic in Congress right now. We have a House that is controlled by Democrats, and certainly Democrats want to bust the spending caps and certainly have tried already to do so. But we have a Republican Senate, and we believe that grassroots pressure on Leader McConnell, who is up for re-election in 2020, as well as other senators, could give us the result we want, which is discretionary spending levels that are consistent with the Budget Control Act. If we're successful and we actually have to force Congress to appropriate at the spending levels in current law, we will actually see a spending reduction this year by $150 billion. That's a big deal, if not more. So that's what we're aiming for. Now, some have said, well, the president wants a continuing resolution, which would maintain current spending levels about $1.3 trillion. That's probably a win at this juncture, provided the White House continues that posture. Now, again, that doesn't include about 70% of the rest of federal spending, because that's not specifically appropriated nor subject to the budget caps. But what we're talking about is only discretionary spending, about 30% of federal spending. But still, it's a win, and it would be a win for fiscal conservatives. But Jerry, we have to start talking about the broader conversation in terms of mandatory spending and interest on the national debt, because that's a big deal.
Explain to us, how does it work in terms of automatic increases in, let's say Social Security, or maybe it's not Social Security, but, certain funds, Medicaid or whatever. So in other words, no matter what happens, those, costs will increase. Tell us.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So those programs are not capped. I mean, meaning that as people enroll into them, they are entitled to those benefits. And because there's no set budget for them, there's no set cap on the number of enrollees or anything like that. I mean, we're not suggesting that there should be, but because there's not a cap, they just can continue to grow unchecked. The more people who enroll in them every year, the more we have to spend, especially as we have a generation, the baby boom generation retiring, we're going to see spending or outlays on those programs increase dramatically. There's about two people paying into Social Security for every one retiree. When Social Security started, it was around 40, give or take a few people. So we've seen a dramatic drop off in the number of workers compared to the number of beneficiaries. So what we want to see is structural reforms to Social Security that allow people, first of all, freedom to invest their money how they see fit, as well as that addresses the long-term viability of the problem. That's going to include a retirement age increase. It's just a necessity. We're living a lot longer than we were when Social Security started. The average life expectancy for an American now is about 78, 79 years. When Social Security started, it was under the retirement age. So we have to start reassessing and modernizing the program to meet the changes in American society. And there's been a proposal that actually shows us how to do that. It was in the 114th Congress. Congressman Sam Johnson introduced a bill called the Social Security Reform Act.
Okay, what year would that be about?
He actually introduced it in the end of 2016, which was
recently. Okay.
Yes, it was in. It actually showed a surplus. Right now, Social Security is running an unfunded liability of about $14 trillion. That's the projected unfunded liability. This actually created a $600 billion surplus over in perpetuity over the next 75 years.
Wow.
So it did what it was supposed to do. And thankfully, the Republican Study Committee, which is a group of about 150 conservative members of the House Republican Conference, have produced a budget that would adopt the Social Security Reform Act. Now, there's other changes to Medicare, which is a much deeper conversation, more than we have time for here today. But Medicare is the bigger behemoth. That's $37 trillion in unfunded liabilities. We talk about the national debt being $22 trillion. I mean, Social Security and Medicare are almost triple that. So those programs have to be addressed over the long term, and that would mean structural reforms across the board. And there's other interesting ideas, Jerry, that haven't been talked about that much, that haven't received that much attention, but are growing in popularity on the Hill. And one of those is a proposal that could be coming soon, we hope will be coming soon, that is called the Maximizing America's Prosperity Act. And it would put a cap on federal spending as a percentage of what we call potential gross domestic product, which is basically GDP, the gross domestic product of the United States, if it were operating at full employment. So it would be constant. It would be stable. GDP has ebbs and flows. When there's a recession, GDP declines. But this would be constant. It would ensure stability. And Kevin Brady, Congressman Brady, has been working on that. He actually spoke at an event that FreedomWorks hosted on the Hill on April 30th and talked about it. And we actually, FreedomWorks actually just recently rolled out an entire booklet on how to talk about entitlements, on offering solutions on how to address these problems. And that's available on our website at freedomworks.org for free. You can just go check it out and read it. We encourage you to do so. But these are all things, and I think the open-endedness of these programs is something that, not to say that we're going to cap enrollment or anything like that, but the conversation has to start. It has to start now. If Republicans are ever going to take control of the House again, and certainly they will at some point in time, they better have answers for these things. Mm. And that's what we mean to do, is start having this conversation.
Can you go back, if you would, to the Medicare question or Medicare issue? And you were using the phrase unfunded liabilities. Did I understand you to say $37 trillion is there in unfunded liabilities, and yet our national debt is about $21 trillion? What does this mean? This means we owe $21 trillion, but in reality we owe $21 trillion plus this $37 trillion for the unfunded liability of Medicare, plus, you know, maybe some other unfunded liabilities.
Yes. So essentially what I mean is we have the national debt. You're right. It's actually a little over 22 trillion now. And that includes intergovernmental transfers, which are basically exchanges between different government agencies, which some people would argue that taxpayers are actually on the hook for, and they probably are right. So in all actuality, we are talking about $22.1 trillion. So there are programs that we have, Social Security, Medicare being specific ones, where taxpayers pay into those programs. Yes, FICA taxes are in your basically payroll taxes. You pay into that on every paycheck. But the amount of revenue coming into those programs does not even come close to equaling the benefits that are going to be paid out. So in perpetuity, over the next 75 years, as it relates to Medicare, we'll be paying out $37 trillion more in benefits than we are able to pay.
Wow. And then
based on the revenues that are coming in for that program.
Sure. And then in the meantime, so you're saying it's not paying for itself now, and yet you have people like AOC or Bernie Sanders saying what we need is Medicare for all. Wouldn't that just increase these unfunded liabilities?
Yeah, I mean, look, the entire notion, and we actually address Medicare for all in our entitlement booklet. We talk about it a little bit. The scope of the program, not just Medicare for all, but the Green New Deal and all the quote-unquote ambitiousness that it shows, we're talking about a massive centralization of government that would make even the most devout Leninists blush. It's really, really scary. I mean, this would be, you would have to make it almost, we would have a almost a totalitarian government to make this work, and it still wouldn't work. Because we've seen how totalitarianism plays out across the world, it doesn't work. And socialism certainly doesn't work. That's essentially what they're talking about is crippling tax increases. People will be paying upwards to even have a revenue source that would come close to meeting the spending levels that would come with this. You would have to have 90% income tax rates. And even then, your projections probably wouldn't be met because people will find ways around it. If people talk about the 95% tax rates in the 1950s, yeah, sure, they had that. But if you look at the percentage of the economy that was being paid in individual tax receipts, it's actually higher now than it was back then. And the reason it's higher now than it was back then is because people were finding ways to avoid paying taxes. Tax evasion was very high. People were finding ways around the system. And certainly they will find ways around the system going forward if Congress were to enact tax levels that high or even close to that high. I mean, even the 70% rate that Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez has talked about, people will find ways to avoid that. That's inevitable. And good luck trying to clamp down on that because people will get creative.
What scares me, though, is just a couple weeks ago, Bernie Sanders was on Fox News, which, you know, is supposed to be a conservative or more conservative outlet. And at a town hall meeting, he, as I recall, he got raucous applause when he said, "We need Medicare for all." So a lot of people hear the phrase and think, "Oh, yeah, yeah, that's fair. That's just. That's what we need." And yet you're saying, no, this would even just bankrupt us and it just wouldn't work.
Jerry, I mean, it's exactly what I'm saying. It would bankrupt us. The unfunded liability, the number that I said, that $37 trillion would be substantially higher. It's not just that. People who are susceptible to hearing things about freebies, then you start talking about, well, you're going to lose your private health insurance coverage because the Medicare for All bills in Congress, both Senator Sanders' bill as well as Pramila Jayapal's bill over in the House, explicitly forbid private competition.
Wow.
It's not worded like that, but what they basically say is that there cannot be any competing health insurance products offered. So if a private insurance company wants to go out and offer hospital insurance or some other type of health insurance coverage, they would be explicitly prohibited from doing so under Medicare for All. So good luck. You saw the uproar over President Obama saying, if you like your health insurance coverage, you can keep it. This would be that on steroids. It wouldn't come to pass because people will be losing their government run, or excuse me, their private health insurance because the government would be forcing them into a government run program.
Well, I think we need to be very careful to just keep saying, you know, what does this mean? Like, for example, the phrase single payer, single payer, single payer. What that means is the government is the single payer. It means you lose all, like you're saying, all other options. Okay, we have less than a minute to go. CR, we keep hearing the phrase CR, which stands for Continuing Resolution. What does that phrase mean, and how does that relate to this discussion? 45 seconds.
Sure, 45 seconds. So basically what that means is that on September 30th, that there has not been an agreement on any sort of government funding bill, that Congress will pass a resolution that will maintain current spending levels for a specified amount of time. That can either be a few months, a few weeks, or even through the course of the next fiscal year, which would be October 1st through September 30th. That essentially is what that means.
So sort of like a fancy way to get around the spending caps that you keep getting back to.
Actually, they would maintain the current spending caps, which is like I said before, some people will consider that to be a win if you're just maintaining current spending levels.
Oh, in other words, they're not going to spend
correct.
More, at least. Okay. Well, we're basically out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Jason Pye, we'll put a link to your article here, freedomworks.org, for more information. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, Jerry. Have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.